Back to school season is coming up. It's just a few weeks away, and it seems like a great time to maybe look at ADHD in relation to going back to school.
Well, absolutely, because I think it is that, you know, time of the year when, you know, summer is unfortunately coming to an end, and as kids are getting back to school, I think this is the time where parents and teachers are most likely to sort of notice or wonder, you know, how's my kid doing? Is this normal, or is this something I should be concerned about? And I think with the case of ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, you know, it's important to understand that, you know, all of us, and especially kids, are not going to have perfect attention, right? So when we talk about ADHD, we're really talking about consistent and highly problematic difficulties within attention or hyperactivity. It's not the case that sometimes, you know, we don't always listen to people and kind of trail off and our mind wanders, or that we sometimes have trouble focusing on tasks that are boring, right? Those are things that are pretty common to all humans, right?
And I would imagine more so the younger you are, right?
Well, absolutely. You think about, you know, delay of gratification and sort of self-control. Those are skills that kids are developing. So it's important that we understand that through that, kind of with that caveat, right? That, you know, we're all, you know, I spend, with my job, I'm fortunate enough to travel to schools, I go into classrooms, and, you know, it can be challenging. Second graders, that they have lots of energy all the time, and it's important to understand that that's normal, right? That's sort of the normal developmental piece. So the question we have, and then what I do as a clinical psychologist, is come in and say, well, when is this abnormal? When does this sort of enter the area of maybe being a neurodevelopmental condition and not just everyday difficulties with attention?
Is there a certain age threshold that children need to be at to be able to make a reasoned diagnosis?
That's a great point. And as a general rule, you know, younger kids, it's much more difficult to parse that out, right? ADHD is typically diagnosed in mid-childhood. Ages 8 to 12 or 6 to 12 tend to be the range where we're best at picking up on the signs and differentiating it, right? Because for younger kids, it can be very tricky to kind of see, is this developmentally appropriate, or might this be signs of a neurodevelopmental condition like ADHD?
So what are some red flags that you look for when trying to diagnose this in children?
Right. And I think the challenge here is that, you know, on the face, we all know what ADHD is, right? It's difficulty paying attention, persisting in tasks, or on the hyperactive impulsive side, it's sort of trouble staying in your seat, kind of like having ants in your pants, running around, lots of energy. And so... You know, the thing is, all kids show this to some degree. The big warning signs or the red flags are really how pervasive the problem is and how intense it is, right? That we're really, when we're looking for signs of ADHD, we're looking for across different contexts. So it's not just in one class that happens to be boring, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's in every class and at home and while at the theme park and at the, you know, at birthday parties. It's multiple places, right? Because if inattention's only showing up, if these symptoms are only showing up in one place, it might suggest that that place is just boring or there's something that's not a good fit. So if we see that where a kid, you know, is really good in most school, but just there's one class that has trouble, or if it's just Sunday school or just one thing, that takes us away from ADHD, right? The other piece of it is that intensity, right? It's, you know, if we say all our minds wander sometimes, occasionally, you know, kids are going to have bursts of energy. We're looking for, you know, every day, nearly every day in all settings. So those are really the big pieces. The other thing here, though, is that, you know, one of the best things we can do is a comprehensive assessment, right? For many psychological disorders, one of our challenges is we really rely just on what, you know, the child or parents and teachers can tell us. And that can be problematic because we all, you know, see things differently. We all have our own biases and opinions that can sometimes get in the way of the assessment. The nice thing about ADHD is we have some really powerful assessments that have been developed where a trained psychologist can work with the child and really try to get a sense of their attentional capacity, how they're doing on different tasks. So we have sort of computerized tasks or face-to-face tasks that we can do with the child. A trained psychologist can, over an hour or two or a three-hour assessment, really get in and see how are they performing compared to thousands of other kids on these tasks. And that can be one of the best ways to get an accurate diagnosis.
Is there one test that's universally accepted, or is it best to use multiple tests?
Right, we tend to use a variety. One of the things we look for is cognitive function or intelligence, typically called IQ. Mm-hmm. We're not looking at overall IQ scores. Instead, we're looking at differences between different areas of IQ, right? What we find is one of the signatures of ADHD is often the case that kids are, you know, typically, sort of average with regard to their ability to understand the world, relate things together, solve problems, but they struggle either with short-term memory, sort of keeping things in memory, or working on tasks quickly. Right. So if we see that discrepancy where in general they have pretty broad, well-developed intelligence, but they struggle with, trying to change things in short-term memory, remember lists, switch items around in lists, or trouble working on tasks quickly, that might be a sign. Right. We also have some specialized computer tasks that really go in and look at how does someone sustain attention over time. Right. So one of the tasks we use, it's called the Connors Continuous Performance Task, has kids or adults, spend about 14 minutes doing a rather boring computer task. You know, they have a job to do. And what we can do is compare their performance to thousands of others to see how good are they at doing this job? And is their attention waning? Are they having difficulties, continuing to concentrate on the task as it goes by? So those are some of the tools we use.
Students don't typically express both the attention deficit issue and the hyperactivity issue in equal measure, and some, I'm guessing, don't even express at all one side of that. Is that correct?
Right. So we can be either predominantly inattentive type, where you really see the difficulty focused on sustaining attention, or the predominantly impulsive or hyperactive type, where you see the sort of excessive energy, difficulty sitting still. In some cases, though, you can have combined. Both of those can be present. But you're right. It can be either or both.
And so anything in this spectrum falls under the heading of ADHD.
Exactly. As long as it's, clinically significant and leading to impairments. Like, we really, just having difficulty to pay attention isn't enough. We want to see, how is this affecting the child's ability to perform in school, to form meaningful friendships, to engage with their community in different sort of volunteer organizations, clubs, sports, things like that. We're really looking for that pervasive pattern.
Generally, is it one or the other that is being called attention to that people ask you to kind of step in? Will it be they notice, oh, little Johnny's being super hyperactive, or, little Billy can't pay attention? It's not usually that one person expresses this full range at once, right?
Yeah, and I think you're hinting on another really important piece here, is that in general, we tend to get more referrals and hear about the hyperactive impulsive behaviors, mm-hmm. right? And in general with children, it seems to be the case. The behaviors that are, either defiant or oppositional or aggressive, those sorts of things we hear about, which means that as clinicians, we often can miss, or as a society, we often miss the kids who might be struggling or suffering, but more in silence, right? Inattention isn't always easy to see, right? You can't always tell. The same way things like childhood depression and other sorts of disorders sometimes can be hard to pick up on. So it's easy to see, yes, when a kid's out of their seat and running around the room or hitting others, and we certainly can help and we want to address that. But I think one thing we're doing in mental health is getting better at finding the kids who might be suffering by themselves, who may not be, that we can't just see in the classroom and say, oh no, we need to help them. So I think that's something we're getting better at as well, because we know that when we provide effective treatments for kids, they can succeed in school. And oftentimes the struggles they're dealing with, whether it be depression or even attentional difficulties, really can oftentimes go away with the proper supports and treatment.